And we're rolling now into our second of 3 hours of our roundtable discussion on your finances, the world economy, and just where are we headed. Lots more to talk about. Gerald Celente, Catherine Austin Fitz, and George Year join us when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Gerald Celente with us, Catherine Austin Fitz, George Year. Gerald, they say that the harsh winter was just devastating on the economy. Would you agree?
I would to an extent. I'm back here in the East, and this is the toughest winter I've ever remembered.
Blasted, yeah.
And I really do think it had an effect. However, when you look at some of the other numbers, you have to also question, for example, exports were way off. And I know that they're saying transportation suffered, was down, and that hurt some of the exports. But I really don't think it hurt it that much. So I think it's a mixed message. And particularly when you look around the world and you look, for example, at China's imports and other nations' imports were way down. So I think there was definitely a winter effect, but I think it's deeper than that.
George, you're?
I'm still kind of out to lunch on the global climate thing. Call me a skeptic, if you will. I've done a lot of reading about solar cycles and just because it relates to ham radio, which is a big hobby. And it seems like there is a lag, maybe 3-4 years, between major climate impacts and what's going on in terms of solar activity. And so in terms of how that ripples into the economy, I hate to be a skeptic, especially because there was a big full-court press out this week to tell everybody that, climate change is real and so on and so forth. But I keep looking at the data going, well, I'm not sure that climate change is as big a deal. It used to be, in the 1930s, we had a massive economic impact from the Dust Bowl. And now we've got basically the Dust Bowl is back with a lack of rain in Texas, Oklahoma, and the U.S. Drought Monitor. You can see it.
California's bad, too.
California's terrible. In fact, one of the things I'm looking for is an out-migration from California because of the change in water coming down out there. There's just not going to be enough. And then there's the federal regulations to, do things like save Sierra tree frog or some such. And so the almond growers and others who've put in water-intensive crops, they're looking at issues. But it comes back to a fundamental question. Aren't changes in climate normal? Because we've had famines all the way through history, and that wasn't global warming. So why would this be different?
Catherine, what about the weather with you?
Well, George, if you look at consumer spending in the first quarter, there were two categories that were up. One was utilities. And I think that was the cold weather. Yep. And the second was health, which I think was Obamacare. So energy prices and Obamacare were a 1-2 punch that, in my opinion, wiped out. You have millions of families who've got $100 to $1,000 a month of discretionary income. And between utilities and Obamacare, boom, it got wiped out. And, of course, we have thousands of companies who depend on that discretionary income for their market. So, I think it was a real 1-2 punch. In terms of George's comments on the weather, my attitude is until we understand what chemtrails is, what's in it, why they're spraying it, please don't talk to me about climate change. I think it's all hooey until we look at the, sort of what's being sprayed overhead. There's no doubt, having just driven halfway across the country, the drought is deeply terrible, and you're looking in real areas like New Mexico and Texas for another year or two, and you're going to start to see real weather, large populations migrating because of weather. As George said, people leaving California. The farmers in Fresno, I came through on my way in back to Tennessee in November, and the reports in Fresno was they had farmers who can't make it another season like this. So we're about
horrible.
To see some big shifts if the drought continues.
George, I'd like to stay on this for one other second,
sure.
Too, with the weather. And also, when you looked at housing, although the weather was very severe here in the East, numbers were down in the West and Southwest as well. So the weather is iffy, but as Catherine pointed out, and I just remembered as well about the high energy costs, Do you know the electric bills in the Hudson Valley in February increased 38%?
Oh, my God.
They jacked up the price 38%.
And you used more.
Of course. And these are, it's a Canadian company.
Have they just put in smart meters?
Excuse me?
Have they just put in smart meters?
No.
And, no.
This is a Canadian company, and, you know, there used to be, utilities used to be public services, of course, at one time. And it's a Canadian company that bought out Central Hudson, and in both February and March, they went up over 38% and more than that in March. And the people, of course, the bills are doubling, actually.
Right.
And again, going back, people only have so much money. I mean, and, you know, those of us that work for a living that haven't been born on third base and thought we hit a triple, you know, we know what this really feels like. And then the people that are elderly people, people barely making ends meet, you know, this really crimps consumer sales.
If you look at the numbers in the first quarter, Gerald, the excess was coming out of savings. So people are drawing down their 401ks, they're drawing down their savings to reach and make the payments for utilities in Obamacare.
Exactly. And you're one of the few people that's talking about what this Obamacare is costing. And then when you look at the increases in GDP, you're seeing a lot of that increase come from health care.
And the insult added to the injury on this whole energy pricing front comes when a responsible person goes out and makes an investment in solar. Now they have just passed rules in Oklahoma which will punish the average citizen who goes out and puts in solar by charging surcharges, connect fees. They're going to throw the book, and I understand that the brothers up in the billionaire brothers who are active in politics up in Kansas are trying to get the same nonsense put through 22 other state legislatures. So they're going to penalize people who say, well, gosh, I want to reduce my operating costs of my home. I think I'll put, you know, 10 grand worth of solar panels in, and that will pay for itself over 15 years. Wrong. The public is getting screwed to the wall on this one because the idea is corporations get to make the money, not the people.
And that's what it's always been about, hasn't it?
It's about franchising, George. I mean, during the break, I was making a note about franchises because, you know, auto insurance, another kind of a franchise granted by government. The medical thing, the whole Obamacare, a franchise granted to the medical industry. The drugs, there's the FDA. There's a franchise to get your drug on the market. And in communications, the internet is being stolen back again because the head of the FCC just recently announced that, we're really going to go ahead with two internets, the regular internet and the corporate high-speed delivery internet, and that high-speed delivery internet is going to be a pay-for-play kind of a deal, just like the government seized control of the radio waves in the 1934 Communications Act. We're replaying so many of these long wave cycles. And by the way, that's the 75-year economic cycle. You go, or 83. When you go back to 1934, look at here we are in 2014, we're seeing the expansion of franchise power by government.
You agree with that, Gerald?
Well, yeah. I mean, and George mentioned, you know, the new head of the FCC, and his name is Thomas Wheeler. And you want to talk about a revolving door. I love it, you know. Obama's going to sweep Washington clean, you know. And this guy, I mean, he was the head of the two major trade associations in the communications industry. And you look at the FCC, the revolving door. And yeah, they're taking it away from us.
In my day, the FCC commissioners would be there for years. Years. I remember the late Jim Quello. Loved the guy. He ended up, he was my professor at the University of Detroit. He ran a great radio station in Detroit, and he was an FCC commissioner. Just a superb guy. But they were there for a long, long time. That doesn't happen anymore.
No,
they pop in and pop out.
Yeah, again, you look at, you know, who Wheeler is. And maybe they should call him Wheeler Dealer because, I mean, after all, this is a guy that was the head of two of the biggest trade associations that represent the communications industry. And you're looking now with the Comcast deal and others, and it's monopolization, and it's happening right in front of us, and it goes back to energy and everything else. It's a multinational takeover. You know, when to me, four words killed capitalism in America, and they were uttered by George Bush's U.S. Treasury Secretary, Henry Paulson. Too big to fail.
That's right.
And everything that George was talking about, with all the with the co-opting between business and government, it's called fascism. In other words, that's the merger of state and corporate powers, and that's, I believe, that's what we're seeing.
And talking about powers, you three, 2016 is not that far away. My front runners with my predictors tell me so far, it looks like it's going to be Hillary on the Democratic side, and Jeb Bush probably will get it on the Republican side. Let's go through each one of you. Catherine, you first. Do you have any picks of those two
ones? What you're being told is right, because if you look at what happened with the Supreme Court decision on contributions, essentially the last restrictions coming off,
yep.
What I'm seeing, George, is a real fear of what could happen, you know, if we had real free elections with campaign financing restrictions. And I think you're seeing the corporations look at what's going on and saying, wait a minute, you know, we don't want a food fight here. We don't want a mess. We're scared of how angry people are. What we're going to do is clear out the competition. We've seen Christie, Cuomo, other competitors, you know, clearly under pressure, being knocked off. And I think sort of the overt side of the corporations are saying, you know, we want something clean and we want to make sure we get somebody who's acceptable to us. And I think, you know, if you look at the economic warfare and tensions going on both domestically and the world, I think people are getting scared.
I think so, George.
So there's a real effort top down to kind of engineer this and make this flick.
George, here, do you see anybody else other than those two?
I think Ted Cruz has at least an equal shot with Jeb Bush. I think that the Bush family, there are a lot of us who are Tea Partyists who look at, I won't say Tea Partyists, I'll say really, really independent voters who are willing to look at records, performance, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are going to look at the Bush family and say, look, Dad ran the CIA. Dad was president. Then along came George the Second, and he got to be president. Enough. We don't
enough
need
is
the aristocracy.
We don't want to. Yeah, we don't want this dynasty here.
Yeah, exactly. And so you've got guys like Ted Cruz coming out today with 76 lies of the Obama administration. So he's starting to hit back, saying, you know, what happened to due process for Americans being killed by drones overseas? That, you know, is that really constitutionally what we're about? That's an interesting debate. I hope it makes it into the political arena, but so far it doesn't look like it. So I think Cruz, he's got a lot of minority appeal, very strong in Texas. I think he's got some potential. Rand Paul, maybe as a vice president for Cruz.
What do you think, Gerald?
Well, we did a piece in the New Trends Journal. We call it the Presidential Reality Show. And after going through the whole list, here was our trend forecast. In the absence of new entrants from the established parties, a viable third-party challenger, and or a major wildcard event, we forecast a Hillary Clinton versus Rand Paul race in 2016. And if the election were to be held today, considering Rand Paul's hardline anti-abortion stand and vacillating positions on same-sex marriage, we predicted Hillary Clinton would squeak out a victory.
Hmm.
Place your bets. Whoever wins, you lose. I want to. I'm a political atheist. I won't vote for any of the Bloods of the Crips. I look at both parties as murderers and thieves. They start wars and kill people and rob our dough. So what we write has nothing to do with who we want.
Understand.
Now, when we wrote that was before the movement going back to Jeb Bush. And here's what happened. All of a sudden, on one day, we started seeing George W. Bush's paintings make the front page of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and the Financial Times. So what they're doing is they're cleaning up the littered legacy of George W. Bush. And I believe exactly as you had begun this conversation with, I believe at this point it's going to be Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton.
That's right. And it's going to be an interesting race and take. And then the bottom line is, what do we get? 4 more years of everything else?
Exactly. It's more of the same. You know, and there is absolutely no difference to me. You know, there's just, you know, tangential differences, how they dress and how they present themselves. But it'll be this more of the same but worse. Yeah.
One of my favorite movies, The Movie Network. You all remember that with Peter Finch, the late Peter Finch, playing Neil, Howard Beale. And one of his statements, here he is in his trench coat on camera, looking like Columbo, saying, "All we want as Americans is to be left alone. Give us our telly and our toaster and our radial tires and leave us alone." And I think George and Catherine and Gerald, Americans simply want to be left alone. They want to have their nice little house, their one or two cars, their family intact, their job where they have some income. They want to go to their sporting events and go to their favorite restaurants. And that's what they want.
I'm going to be, George, I'm going to be the tough guy.
All right.
Okay, because you all know my red button story. I'll tell it again just to make sure we all know. In 2000, I asked a group of 100 Americans who would push a red button if it would stop all hard narcotics trafficking in their community. And out of 100 people dedicated to evolving our society spiritually, 99 said they would not push the button because that drug money is, you know, and the people who control that money essentially are financing the government deficit. They move their money out of the stock market, their mutual funds would go down. So the reality is whoever we elect as president is going to have to, the American people want that person to not push the red button. And we know for many decades now the American people have been the beneficiary of the global game that the government is playing with the debasement of the dollar and with using the U.S. military to force natural resources to be exchanged to us for cheap. So
I agree
with
that.
American people have always supported this game. Where's the popular support to run the model clean?
So you don't think they want that just leave me alone attitude and let me do my thing?
When 99% of an audience tells me that they would not push the red button, they would continue to allow drugs to be marketed to kids in their area so as not to collapse the economy, what it tells me is, you know, the complicity is much broader and deeper, is my experience.
George,
go ahead, George.
People want is the check.
Yeah. I think there's something deeper. I think that America... And it astounds me. Every morning I get up, I look for the headline that someone is finally going to be a leader in this country. Instead, everybody is basically bought by somebody else's checkbook, and it's a big circle, you know what. So what I'm looking for is I'm looking for somebody in any political party who can articulate a new American dream. The last great American dream we had was we're going to put a man on the moon. We haven't done
jack. We don't have a dream right now.
We don't have a dream. That's right. And if you look at that core psychological lack, it's why my kids are millennials, and they look at the future and they go, this sucks. Why should I buy a house? Why should I work my butt off and get degrees? Why should I be excellent? It's all going to blow up because the money's falling apart. There's no jobs. Robots are going to take 50% of the workforce in the next 20 years. Nobody in politics is talking about that. We don't have any transition plan to a 20-hour work week because people in politics are too stupid to articulate a worthwhile dream.
Much more to come with the Big Three, Gerald, Catherine, and George on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour with our roundtable panelists, we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, much more to talk about on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, with Gerald Celente, Catherine Austin Fitz. George, you're at least three of us, of the four, remember the John F. Kennedy assassination back in 63. Catherine, I don't know. I think you were a little too young for that.
Oh, no, I remember.
You do? Okay.
I remember very well. I remember exactly where I was. Major discussions going on in our household about what was up.
From that moment, we lost something in this country that we have never, ever been able to replace. Gerald Celente, will we ever get trust and faith back in government?
Yeah, I would say it can, but not under the current system. I mean, to me, as I said, the Republicans and Democrats, you know, they're two political mafias. But I believe that I agree, by the way, with what you said about the movie Network. And there is a change going on. You look at the polls that are coming up recently about how many people no longer want foreign involvement. And you saw that with Syria, by the way,
mm-hmm.
when President Obama was and John Kerry were pushing for action against Syria, and the people didn't want it. And then you look at the polls that come out continually. You know, back in January, there was a poll that only 2% said Congress was doing an excellent job, 6% said good, and 24% said fair, and 66% said poor. So I think that people just want to live their lives. They really want to be left alone. We have a legacy of failure as far as foreign entanglements. So I really believe that, you know, in talking about Kennedy, you know, one of the stories, one of the ways I made my name in trend forecasting, and it was when I came out with my book Trend Tracking back in the late 1980s. And in that book, I had forecast, it came out in 1989, that there'd be a new third party because the people were so disgusted what was going on with the administration and then following, of course, on the heels of the 1987 stock market crash.
Mm-hmm.
And I predicted a new third party. For some reason, I mentioned Ross Perot's name. And I really believe that those conditions exist today. If we had someone of credibility and that was really looking, you know, I was going actually tonight, just by accident, I was looking for something and I came across an old notebook and I'm going through it and I had some notes about Perot. And you know what Perot kept doing? He kept talking about what's good for the people, what's good for the people. And if we had somebody doing those kind of things and really putting things in the context of how can we rebuild America, I think you could see a strong third-party movement, and I really believe the people want what's best for this country.
Could it be a Jesse Ventura?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think it needs to be somebody, you know, not in the entertainment field, not somebody that's been there before, someone that's fresh and clean, has no ties to any special interest, and is really there for the people. I think the time is right for it.
I would have liked Lee Iacocca at that time.
He would have been one. But again, you know, he would be too allied with business in so many ways.
Yeah.
And remember, don't forget the Chrysler bailout. You know, so I think you need somebody totally removed.
But remember, he paid him off early.
I know, but it's still a bailout. And if you or I go bust, we don't get bailed
Nobody's
out. A lot of people resent those things.
Except that maybe you and I can call each other, Gerald, and help each other.
That's right.
Well, here's what you need. I agree with Gerald. I think there's a real opportunity, and with George, to put forward a new American dream. The reality is, to do that, you're going to have a pretty radical reengineering of how the federal government money works. And so you're talking about something that's going to, you know, it's going to have to inspire change and real movement locally in 3,100 counties. It can be done. If you look at, George, if you look at the waste in the economy, particularly the government money,
yeah,
there is enough money to kind of jump the curve on the situation despite everything we've been talking about. So it can be done, but you're talking about incredible leadership. and you're talking about a willingness of many, many people to change in very significant ways.
The speed bump, I think, George, that will keep a third party from happening is that the existing duopoly is owned by corporate masters and by super PACs, the political action committees. And take congressional races just as one small example. In many congressional races, the majority of the money is not coming from within the district, from the people who live.
It comes from outside of it.
It's outside, right. It's those little funds in Florida and places like Greenwich, Connecticut, and cities, you know, in Kansas where various big people with deep pockets are. And so what ends up happening is until we are willing to radically change the laws on campaign finance to prohibit the interstate transfer of funds for any elective purpose other than campaigning for the presidency, we ain't going to have change. Sorry to break it to you.
Well, you know, I believe that the vacuum is so large right now. I mean, the conversation among the four of us, we came up with Jeb Bush, Hillary Clinton, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul. I think that was it.
That's it.
With Hillary and Jeb being the front runners.
Right. And the people are tired of this. They really want something fresh. And I believe that, and yes, as Catherine said, you know, you need somebody that would really be inspirational. And yes, it would be difficult. But we all know that everything that we do that is great is of difficulty. It takes a lot of work to be a great musician or a great anything. And it takes practice and dedication. I think the time has never been better in my lifetime than for a new third-party movement. And here's where, by the way, the social media plays a role, where it can happen
here's
and have
an effect. The challenge is that with the Supreme Court taking any restrictions off of finance campaigning, the you know, a third party is just going to advantage one of the two major candidates.
Right.
As a practical matter. The other thing I have to say is, you know, you don't need the president to lead the charge. I mean, the president of the United States is much more a titular title, we know, than a real title. So if you look at a very broad-based movement in the population, challenging Congress to do it could be enough to make it happen. Because if you look right now at the federal spending, whether it's the Constitution, the laws, or the regulation, the federal government's budget and credit and contracting is run significantly outside of the law. And so, you know, it doesn't have to be led by the president to shift this back under the law. And, you know, in theory, 3,100 counties could have judges put the money, the tax money, in escrow because, you know, if you look at the law, we have an obligation as citizens to make sure that that money is spent legally. So, you know, we have many avenues locally and at the congressional level. We don't need the president. We don't need the White House to do it.
And yet, Catherine, isn't it true in your opinion as well as mine that right now people who make it into Congress, the fools on the Hill, as I call them, are only getting there because of out-of-district money?
Not completely. I mean, every month I send money to Marcy Kaptur. You know,
okay.
So I think it's very important not to use the word everyone and all on extremes.
Okay,
you know, there are a lot of being a congressman is a very brutal and hard job to do.
Yes.
And, you know, and we want good people to do these jobs. Now, here's the reality. If you're a person in Congress, you know, you have to please a variety of different constituencies. First and foremost, a group of people that if you don't do what they say, they're going to have you killed. They're going to have your kids killed. And you can't operate with impunity. I was an honest government official, and then I was an honest, you know, my company supported honest government officials. You know, and I got targeted, if you've ever seen the movie Enemy of the State, I played Will Smith in real life. And what I know is if you don't have a control file, they'll invent one for you, and it takes 11 years and $6 million to prove you're clean. So we're operating in an environment where a congressman you know, has their hands tied in a lot of different ways, including the fact, and this gets back to why I brought up the red button problem, is that their constituents, you know, want more checks, want more money, want more goodies.
Yeah, they do.
And so we need a process in government where we can sit down and say, okay, how do we reoptimize resources instead of pleasing everybody, large and small, just to get their check this, you know, this week or this month? And that's why I come back to transparency. If we could require, and we don't need government to do this for us, if we could look at financial statements and government budgets for our county and our congressional district, we could start to see the manifold opportunities to re-engineer. I can't tell you how many counties in this country we are spending $250,000 per unit on HUD housing when $50,000 or $100,000 would buy and rehab a foreclosed property, or we are spending $100 to $150 paying a corporate contractor to do something that we could teleport into that community where $25 plus health care, you know, would create full employment. So there are hundreds of millions of reengineering opportunities in every one of the counties, but it starts with the local Chamber of Commerce and the local Rotary pouring over the budget and the financials for that place and saying, okay, let's talk about how we can make money getting the government money back inside of the law.
George, you have talked about an attack on cash. What does that mean?
Oh, just the process of trying to get people away from doing really creative, independent things with their money. A lot of small investors used to trade in the commodity market, thinking the commodity markets were honest. And then along come these bankruptcies. I know another guest on the show tonight has had some unfortunate experience with a commodity firm blowing up from under him. It's those kinds of things that are forcing people more and more to go to a limited number of stock brokerage firms. The online outfits are basically commoditizing the investment opportunities out there. And so your ability to do things like buy and sell gold locally, those are being infringed gradually as the surveillance state evolves, so that your accountability in the future will continue to be greater and greater for any activity related to your money. And so if you buy a bunch of gold today and it goes up, how do you justify that wealth entering your bank account when you sell it someday? Those are the very real issues we have as the surveillance economy evolves around us.
What do you think of gold or silver, George?
I love them. Unfortunately, right now, we're still in this bottoming process of inflation. And until the economy finds some real jobs, we're going to have some issues. I agree with Catherine. I think that the right thing to do is to re-engineer government. But it's right now a government that basically by the high court decisions has been pretty much eBayed out.
What about hope, Gerald Celente, for people? People listening to this show right now, I want them to walk away from it saying, I've got a chance. I've got a shot at this. Is there any hope?
Well, you know, they say that hope is the most negative word in the metaphysical dictionary in the sense that it's something happening without doing anything to make it happen. You know, I'm of the Vietnam era draft age, and I was, you know, I was, what, 1965, you know, I was just out of high school. And people were taking to the streets. And you know why they were taking to the streets and they weren't taking to the streets in the Afghan and Iraq war? Because they were getting drafted. Their lives were on the line.
Yeah.
It goes back to what George was saying about his two children, I believe it was two, millennials. And how he said, how they, to paraphrase what he said, and correct me if I'm wrong, how the future sucks. And that's where the action's going to come. When people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. And that's the ones that are going to be, I believe, that are going to start doing a lot to make things start to change. Because they have a futureless future.
And I think some of that is happening now.
It is happening. And that's why, by the way, I'm optimistic about the future. I mean, I see what's going on, but I've never seen a vacuum so large. It can be filled with anything. Let's not forget, the Renaissance followed the Black Death in Europe. I mean, people got it in their heads, we're doing something wrong here. And then what was a Renaissance? A rebirth, a rediscovery. I believe in a restoration and a rebuilding of America. There are a lot of people that want it to happen, and they know that the political system isn't going to lead them there. You look what's going on around the world. There are populist movements going on everywhere. Are they making traction? In some places, yes. In other places, no. I believe that, going back to what Catherine said, I wrote down the word inspire. If we had somebody that could really inspire the people, I think you can see this country start to turn around on a dime. I really believe that with all my heart.
Well, like him or not, Kennedy inspired people.
And exactly.
He had a goal. He had a direction. He gave us hope. We need something like that.
And we have no one to inspire us.
No.
It's more of the same and getting worse. You know, you watch, you know, I'm very sensitive to culture, and that's part, it's part of my business. And I think of the death of style. You know, I have a photograph on my wall over here of my parents' wedding, may their souls rest in peace, 1934, Italian immigrants, first generation. They came here on the boat. You look at this picture and how elegantly everyone was dressed. And now, as we would say in Italian, the people look like cafones, the way they dress. And what I'm saying is it needs to be a restoration of the American spirit. Compare an Ella Fitzgerald to a Miley Cyrus or a Frank Sinatra to a Justin Bieber. But it's gone down on every level and then it's coming up on the levels. Oh, by the way, one of my buildings over here that I just rented out, one of the 1763 person house, I rented it out as life would have it. Warren Buffett's son is the head of this foundation called Novo Foundation. And they're buying up farmland here in the Catskill region. And they're turning it into sustainable agriculture and organic. And the movement is really strong. So what I'm saying is there are a lot of positive things and a lot of things going in the right direction. And if more people would start moving on them, and again, it goes back to quality. So, yes, I believe there can be a restoration of America, a rebuilding of America, but the priorities have to change. And the priority for me, by the way, today, I just read Chuck Hagel, our Secretary of Defense. Yesterday he was in Chicago, and he warned the United States about the risks of isolationism. I don't call it isolationism. I call it non-intervention.
That's right. And it might be smart.
It might be, because every one of the founding fathers said no foreign entanglements. You want to do business with them, fine. So I believe America could be restored if we bring home the troops. After every war, our military used to go down to nothing. And by the way, to put my money where my mouth is and my mind, I started a movement that we're just launching now, and anybody could go to the site. It's called OccupyPeace.us. No one else is, only for the United States, and it's built on no foreign entanglements. Rebuild America.
What would you recommend, Gerald? We're coming up to the break. We may have to talk about this next hour. This lunatic, this group, Boko Haram in Nigeria, capturing these little girls. Would you send troops there?
No. No, I wouldn't. And again, it's the capturing the little girls. Here, you have the Trends Journal. It went out 2 weeks ago. We broke the hot spots around the world. We had all of the hot spots, and then we took the four corners of the world. Do you know one of the places we picked?
That was it.
Nigeria.
Yep.
And it wasn't for that. It's corruption. And when you have all these breakdowns in society, these are the kind of things that come from it.
We're going to come back in a moment. We'll continue chatting with the big three, Gerald Celente, Catherine Austin Fitz, and George Ure. And you'll be part of it this time. We'll take your calls, too.